SaaS Backwards is sponsored by Austin Lawrence Group, specializing in demand gen for SaaS. It sure is noisy. I deleted 100 emails from vendors just this morning. Your buyer has gotten better at ignoring you, and you're going to need a big idea if you want to cut through all that clutter. Austin Lawrence is just the right agency to help you find it. So if your campaigns are falling on deaf eyeballs, let's talk. Visit austinlawrence.com today, and let's build something bigger.
Welcome to the SaaS Backwards Podcast, where we reverse engineer the success of fast-growing SaaS firms and explore strategies CMOs and CEOs are using to drive their businesses forward.
Welcome to SaaS Backwards, a podcast that helps SaaS CEOs and CMOs to accelerate growth and enhance profitability. Our guest today is Rand Fishkin, co-founder and CEO of Sparktura, which enables high-quality audience research for marketers, PR folks, entrepreneurs, and product builders without the need for expensive, time-consuming, inaccurate surveys or impossible-to-scale manual research. Rand, welcome to the podcast.
Ken, thank you so much for having me. Good to be here.
And before we dig in, could you tell us a little bit about Sparktura that wasn't in that little bit of a blurb?
Sure. So Sparktura is a deeply weird company, and I love it that way. So when I say weird, three very weird things about us. One, our team is extremely small. It's just me, Casey, and Amanda. So we keep it incredibly tiny. We're all remote. Amanda's in California. Casey and I are in the Seattle area, but not even close to each other. And we have built something really special that thousands and thousands of marketers, literally, I think 75,000 marketers used the free version of Sparktura last month alone. So kind of wonderful. We have this nice little business. Second weird thing about us, Sparktura is not venture backed, but we are funded. So we're actually funded by a lot of folks, probably like yourself, right? Who, you know, have built their careers in the marketing universe, in the web universe, in the software as a service universe, and put between $25,000 and $100,000 into Sparktura in this very unique fundraising situation. And we actually just completed our investor payback this year. So we paid them back the money they invested. And now if Sparktura sells, or hopefully in a couple of years, we're planning to make another dividend payment to them. We're weird, man. We're like an old school co-op grocery store in the 1960s, you know, paying out dividends to our investors. And then the third very weird thing about Sparktura is that we aim to work between 20 and 30 hours a week, which I don't think a lot of software as a service businesses do, but that is our goal. We're aiming for like French working hours or less and build a great company and great families and happy lives too.
So I've never heard anybody tell me they're trying to get their people to work 20 or 30 hours a week, but you don't have a lot of people. It's almost like the founding crew has sort of a mission to have a distinct work-life balance.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we have this like strange philosophy that I believe is true, but I'm not sure it's true for everyone. And that is that if we only work around 30 hours in a week on average, those 30 hours will be much higher quality than the 30 hours we might put in during a 60 or 80 hour week. And I had this experience from my first company, Moz, which you and I chatted about a little bit before the podcast started, where, you know, I was burning myself out. I dedicated everything about my life to that business. And in my opinion, I would have been far better served. The company would have been better served. The employees, the customers for sure would have been better served if I had slowed my roll and made better decisions. I think that's really what founders and CEOs and a lot of people in software need to do is make great decisions, not work really hard for many long hours.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's interesting. You know, our team is small as well, and we have summer hours. And people do not look forward to Labor Day, right?
I heard this great thing. I think it was on LinkedIn the other day, but someone told me, or one of the posts said that the culture at your company is dictated by how people feel on Sunday night about Monday morning. And I was reading this yesterday, and I thought to myself, man, I'm so excited to go to work tomorrow. I don't know. I just had this like, yeah, I can't wait to get back on my laptop and I want to do this thing. I want to write to these people. I saw the emails that came in over the weekend and I was excited to reply to them. I don't know. I hope Casey and Amanda feel the same. I think they do. I bet they do.
I would put money on that.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit more about the business because I think it's really interesting. we're always, as marketers, trying to figure things out, right? We're in the figuring things out business. And your service helps marketers to figure out some unique kinds of attributes that you couldn't research, yeah, even if you tried. So like the about blurb that I kind of tailored doesn't really tell the story.
I think that's fair. Yeah, I like sort of using an analogy, which is if you were, for example, to say, I really need to study interior designers. Like my friend is starting an interior design business. They're going to be selling maybe a new software product to interior designers to help them manage their clients, which is probably a great space to be in. How am I going to figure out what conferences and events interior designers go to, which social networks they participate on, what podcasts they listen to, what YouTube channels they subscribe to, which social accounts they follow?
Those are already enough hard-to-solve problems.
Those are hard-to-solve problems, right?
Like, very, very much, especially the events they attend.
Oh, man.
And what they listen to, right? Yeah. Those are very dark areas of their endeavor.
Even just something simple like websites. You know, a few years ago, you could go to Google, and Google Ads would actually show you data like that. You could say, hey, I want to find people who search for interior design management software. Show me demographic and psychographic data about them. And Google Ads would do it. And then Cambridge Analytica hit. And they're like, oh, let's just put all that behind the curtain, because also it helps our bottom line quite a bit, right? Because you have to pay Google. You don't know. It's a black box. Facebook was the same way.
I wrote my Google is a monopoly blog post right after all that.
Oh, man. I mean, you know, I actually feel like Cambridge Analytica was supposed to be this watershed moment for tech transparency, and it became exactly the inverse. They pulled back all this data. You remember you used to be able to go to your Facebook page. Like you could go to the SaaS Backwards Facebook page and it would show you, if you were logged into your account, all these insights about your audience, what else they followed, what they listened to and paid attention to. So Casey and I had this idea that that data is technically public on the web. A ton of it is. Everybody you follow on Twitter, every subreddit you subscribe to, every thing that you follow on LinkedIn, every YouTube subscription you've got. If you have an Apple Podcast account, right, it'll show you all the podcast subscriptions. Like all of this is just public on the web. Google crawls it today. They just don't assemble and make this data visible in exactly this way. And we were like, let's just do that for the whole internet. So that is SparkToro's mission. We are certainly not perfect at it. We only have coverage in English language countries right now, but we're slowly getting there.
So that's really interesting. I think we should remind people,
yeah,
what that really implies.
Okay.
So your friend with the imaginary interior design service,
yeah,
if he or she wants to find out what conferences people attend, they would, by their footprint on LinkedIn,
yeah,
or other socials, or even their own websites, they would reveal their behavior.
Yeah. So what SparkToro can see is only public data on,
sure,
the web, right?
I appreciate that it's public.
Yeah, yeah, of course, right? Like, we don't get into anybody's private account or anything like that. But because many interior designers will post, I'm at this event, or they use the event hashtag, or they follow the event on one or more social networks, or they visit the event's website, and you can see that through Clickstream data, right? We buy Clickstream data from a New York company called Datos. So, like, all of this can be combined and mashed together in clever ways, and then there's no AI, there's no machine learning, right? It's like simple division. This many people match the criteria, this many of them had this behavior. And that's essentially what you're seeing in SparkToro.
Wait, there's no AI?
There's no AI, because we don't have to raise venture, so I don't got to lie to anybody about how I'm using AI. No offense, but you know.
Very funny. Well, it's really true. I've said for a long time that, you know, this is a fashion business, you know, the marketing business. So we are in the AI fashion.
It's true. It really is. And look, I mean, if you have an applicable problem that AI is better at solving than anything else, great. I love it. But for us, we have not been able to find a use case for AI that is better than what we were doing currently. And we feel no pressure to shoehorn in a technology that doesn't solve our customers' most pressing problems. And I get very nervous that a lot of SaaS businesses right now are shoehorning in AI because they think their investors want it, or they think it's sexy out in the, you know, universe of what the press will pick up and talk about, or it'll get them on conference stages. I don't know. Ken, that makes me nervous. I played that game before, you know, with like, here's the metrics I'm going to do, here's what I'm going to pursue at Moz. And I think, very frankly, pursuing venture capitalists' interests is what sunk that company. It didn't sink, but made it far less successful than it otherwise would have been.
It's interesting. We had another guest on podcast today,
yeah,
who talked specifically about not being influenced too heavily by your investors, like trusting your gut.
Yes.
Right? Being willing to stick with your vision and being comfortable with the decisions you're making, not being pushed around by investors because they think it'll drive a valuation.
You know, in my case, at my previous company, I was not pushed around by my current investors. They were 100% supportive. You know, they're behind pretty much every decision. But the investors that I wanted to raise my next round from, or that I thought I wanted to raise my next round from, were always influencing every decision. And at every board meeting, that was they had a presence in the room. What we thought they wanted had a presence in the room.
Sure. Like, these guys said if we only had a B2B2C motion, they'd give us $15 million. And all of a sudden, everybody's running around trying to figure out the B2B2C out of something.
As opposed to, wait a minute, do our customers want that? Do they want more of that? Is that going to make them happier? Will they then pay us more for this product, or will we get more customers? And if you can just stick to those fundamentals, you know, at least until you get to a few $100 million in revenue, and then, you know, you do what you want. But I would argue for small cap SaaS, it's a terrible idea to pursue new trendy thing.
Fair enough. So one of the topics I wanted to talk to you about was positioning for young software companies. And maybe we could marry up this idea of being able to generate on-demand insight to the impact on positioning. Because a lot of the work we do is the hard work of interviewing potential users, figuring out what they care about.
Yeah.
Like asking them to reveal what they care about. So you have to be a really good interviewer.
You do. Yep.
And then try and generalize that out of what's admittedly a handful of interviews. So how does a tool like SparkToro make that different and better?
So I would argue that if you are aiming for product knowledge, or, you know, what should we build next? What features do our customers love, or what do they not know about? What do we have to market more and educate them on? Or if you are trying to understand positioning, like how do my customers talk about the problem that they have and how our solution fits into it? You should not use SparkToro for that. That's not something we help with. I mean, our content might help you with that because we have written some stuff on this and we've done it ourselves. But what I would argue instead is when you are trying to solve that same problem in a marketing strategy and channel context, that's when SparkToro is magic, right? So if I'm trying to answer like, hey, what do my customers love about this product and how should I message that to other customers like them? That's surveys and interviews. And I would stick to that. I am aware of no other solution besides the hard manual labor of doing those interviews and compounding that data and looking across these are my 20 best customers and 17 of them said this when they talked about why they use our product. That's the message.
Sort of has to come out of the interview.
It has to come out of the interview, absolutely.
But maybe we could do other things, right? Could we figure out the kinds of content they're more responsive to?
Sure, absolutely. So, I mean, one thing I would absolutely do is once you have that messaging and positioning nailed from your surveys and interviews, your next step is communicating it. You got to go tell that story in the places where your audience pays attention. And I would argue that 10 years ago, 15 years ago, SEO, classic sort of social media content marketing and distribution, those were the best channels for that. And today, I don't use them. I mean, I use social media plenty, but SparkToro gets zero SEO traffic. I know that's crazy. I'm the founder of Moz.
Wait a minute. You've sort of buffaloed me here.
I know. So, okay, here's my argument for why I think this is our strategy and why we practice it, why it's successful for us, why I think other people should do it. My argument is that 10, 15 years ago, when you went on the web, you being pretty much everyone, they did not know the sources of influence that they should pay attention to. And so they pretty much Googled keywords to find trustworthy stuff. And today, that is not true. People follow people, companies, sources of influence, publications, events, webinars. They already follow the sources of influence. I don't go to Google and say, hey, I want some advice on how to be more successful with my SaaS business. There are a variety of keywords that people are using.
I would say our search traffic has gone down on things like
that. Yeah, right? Like there are a variety of searches that people use that imply that visitor journey, right? That goal. But it is so small that I would say the top 5 SaaS conferences this year had more people at them than there were people searching for that term in Google. And so what I would urge you to do is ask yourself, how do I get in front of those conference attendees? How do I get in front of the people who listen to podcasts about SaaS success? How do I get on the websites that I know SaaS founders are paying attention to? Hacker News, I would love to be on the top of Hacker News. That if that happened, I know that a ton of entrepreneurs and people in the SaaS universe would be paying attention to SaaS Backwards. Fantastic. Let's go make a strategy to do that. And that's where SparkToro can really help. So you have the message, you have the positioning, you know what your audience wants, you know what's going to be successful with them, what'll resonate. Go find the tactics, the channels, the source of influence to actually go do it.
So you didn't quite say SEO is dead.
No, I mean,
but you're sort of calling it in a way.
It's so competitive and so subsumed by Google wanting to instant answer everything right on the platform that for years, for example, at Moz, I ranked for selling your SaaS business because, you know, I'd written blog posts about it. We had not sold, so I didn't know what I was talking about. But the keywords would still bring you to Moz because there was lots of content from me on this topic. And some of the people who found that figured out who I was, and maybe they, whatever, bought my book, or they forwarded Moz to their SEO team and, you know, had their SEO team sign up for it. Worked pretty well. And today, if you ask Google, you know, 50, 60, 70% of these types of questions, they give you a snippet with an answer. And as soon as this search generative AI thing, you know, goes into place, the search generative experience, that's going to be like 80%. I mean, I think there's just a shrinking amount of opportunity. And I would argue, again, if you're a small cap SaaS business, your odds of being able to rank, even with incredible amounts of dollars and effort, is low, really low.
So we need to find people then where they actually hang out.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to find a way either to collect them into our own audience or participate where they are.
I would argue both of those are really smart things for marketers to be doing, right? Like, you want to go participate at this conference, be present at that event, you know, get on that podcast, get into that webinar, be on that YouTube channel, and also have some reason why someone who hears you there would then go, oh, I got to go check out their site. So for SparkToro, we do that with a free tool, right? That it's sort of our like product-led growth strategy, which is there's a free version of SparkToro. It's forever free, freemium, as opposed to Moz, which I did with a paid free trial. So very different model. And the reason is that when we want to turn someone else's audience into our audience by capturing an email address, we need to give them something really valuable, some reason to go, you know, oh, I'm going to go to that person's website. I'm going to type it in. I'm going to search Google for it. And then I'm going to use it.
So do you want to try and take a little audience onto your site here? I'd love to offer a little bit up. So what is the free tool and how does someone get it?
Oh, it's on the homepage.
So on the homepage.
So literally, you know, if you go to SparkToro, the first thing it says is just try this for free. And then you start searching and away you go. And I actually believe that a lot of SaaS businesses, especially anybody who's got a self-service, lower price model, should be doing this. And anybody who's enterprise SaaS should be following in the footsteps of people like HubSpot, who have a ton of free tools in a whole bunch of different sectors that provide an email address, right? Back to HubSpot so that they can market to them later. This is the whole concept of turning someone else's audience into your audience.
So I want to return to SEO just for a moment.
Yeah.
Only because as a content marketing firm, we get beat around on this topic a fair amount.
Uh-huh.
And one of my clients, I think I mentioned this to you before, they hired a very traditional SEO outsourced firm, and the content requests or requirements they're very regimented. Mm. And one of the things that they are concerned about, and I think I know the answer, but I'm going to keep going.
Yeah, go.
Is that if the content looks to other AIs like it was AI generated, it's going to hurt you in search. So it's sort of a two-part question. First of all, do you think that's true? And then does it really matter?
So let's see. I have seen evidence of AI generated, but then some human edited
content. Which is our business practices to really massage it.
Yeah.
But it still ranks as maybe AI generated.
I have seen that content. I have seen stats from my old like SEO colleagues about that content performing quite well.
Quite well.
Quite well. Not in every case, absolutely. But there are enough case studies that my previous answer to this question 6 months ago would have been, yeah, that's probably pretty dangerous and you should avoid it.
Right. The gut feel on that is that it would be dangerous, right?
Gut feel is that it would be dangerous. Now I would still say it's probably dangerous long term, but if your goal is in the next 90 days to 6 months, you want to use AI to produce more content than you could have ordinarily, and you have some human editors who are going through and doing basic fact checking, make sure it's credible, make sure that it, you know, lives up to your company's standards.
Right, there's style issues a lot of times
style
with that
issues,
content.
Voice issues, tone, all that kind of stuff. And instead of taking, you know, I don't know, 7 hours per piece of content, you can take 70 minutes per piece of content. Great. I would encourage you to try that right now. I think that there will be a lot of people who have success with it in the short term. And then, yes, I agree with you that in the long term, primarily because Google does not want to train AI on other AI-generated content, and neither does Bard or ChatGPT or any of these, there will be...
So there might be a price to pay.
There might be a price to pay in the future.
Awesome. I feel like we've covered a lot of ground, and it was awesome.
Oh,
I also want to honor my commitment to... you know, have you in and out in about 20 minutes and we're a little late.
Okay, no worries.
But if people want to connect with you or keep up with what you're writing about, what's the best place for them to do that?
Yeah, so sparktoro.com that I mentioned, I am rand@sparktoro.com, so you can email me anytime. Happy to answer every email I get. And I'm active on LinkedIn as well.
Awesome, thanks. And I'm on LinkedIn/in/KenLempit. And if you haven't subscribed to the podcast, now you know you ought to. Please do so. Wherever podcasts are distributed. Rand Fishkin, thank you so very much.
Yeah, my pleasure, Ken.
That was a lot of fun.
It was.
Thanks for listening to the SaaS Backwards Podcast, brought to you by Austin Lawrence Group. We're a growth marketing agency that helps SaaS firms reduce churn, accelerate sales, and generate demand. Learn more about us at www.austinlawrence.com. You can email Ken Lempit at kl@austinlawrence.com. about any SaaS marketing or customer retention subject. We hope you'll subscribe, and thanks again for listening.